From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. This week marks the 50th anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King's famous I Have a Dream speech at the historic 1963 March on Washington. In the days leading up to that anniversary, the news press has been running a special series looking into race relations in Southwest Florida in the days of segregation through today. We'll talk with the reporters behind that special series titled Dreaming in Color, I Have a Dream 50 Years Later. Plus, foreign illegal fishing in the Gulf of Mexico. It's a growing problem that poses risks to our economy, national security, the sustainability of the industry, and has even been linked to drug smuggling and human trafficking operations. Yet few of us even know what happens. We'll explore the extent of the problem, as well as a pair of bills in the U.S. Senate aimed at addressing the issue. First, this news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. The Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission urges residents to mark their calendars for September 1st. That's the date of the state's next license-free saltwater fishing day, meant to encourage tourists and residents alike to discover the joys of saltwater fishing in the Gulf. But our recreational and commercial fishing industries are currently under a threat that remains largely unknown to the general population: foreign illegal fishing in the Gulf of Mexico. That's when illegal fishing vessels from other countries enter U.S. waters to harvest fish, and experts say it's coming at a great cost to our economy, national security, and sustainability of important fish populations. Joining me now for a closer exploration of the extent of the problem and ongoing efforts to combat it is William Ward. He's the Tampa-based CEO of Captain's Finest Seafood and a master captain licensed as a merchant marine. Ward is also a member of the Gulf Fishermen's Association Board of Directors and the Gulf States Marine Fisheries Commission. He also serves on advisory committees to the Gulf of Mexico Fisheries Management Council. Will Ward, thanks for making the trek down to our studios to be with us.
Good morning, John. Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
And first of all, tell us about the state of the Gulf Coast fisheries now.
Well, we've had a long history, a rich history of fisheries in this area, the part of the country. But recently we've gone in through some really tough, difficult times to rebuild a number of our fishery stocks, which were depleted over the course of years, over the last 50 years. But the good news is that through good work, hard work, working with the scientific community and sacrifice, both by the recreational industries and the commercial industries, some of our fishery stocks are now starting to turn around and start to come back.
And these are, you know, important, plate fish here. We're talking grouper, snapper, things along those lines that we've been worried about.
Exactly. The red grouper fishery, the black grouper fishery, the red snapper fishery in particular also, all of those are on the rebound because of strong work, hard work, and sacrifice both in the industry and the scientific community coming together, bringing together the hard evidence to make the moves that we needed to make to rebuild those fisheries. I mean, it's not just about the ecological issues, which in and of itself is critically important. Sustainability is always important, but about the economic drivers of all these industries. The Gulf of Mexico, John, just to give you an example, you're looking at about a $14 billion industry annually, 170-some thousand jobs directly impacted by those fisheries. And that's just direct impacts, not taking into account the others.
Well, and I touched on it briefly in the introduction there, but tell us generally what we mean when we refer to foreign illegal fishing in the Gulf of Mexico. What's occurring?
Well, what's going on and what we've been working on at Gulf Fishermen's Association and a number of business owners and both concerned citizens is there's two pieces of legislation that address this issue exactly. What's happening is, first, there's a lot of illegal fishing that goes on in the Gulf of Mexico. Let's just put that out there. Why is that taking place? Because regulations are such that international treaties are weak. Flags of convenience can come into our waters, our waters ourselves, go in and fish and poach, take them out of our fisheries from a regulated environment, if you will, back into a non-regulated environment and profit from that. Estimates, just to give you an idea, John, about how big this problem is about foreign illegal fishing worldwide, upwards of about $24 billion. A year is, in essence, being harvested around this world without being regulated in illegal environments by those that are involved. In the Gulf region in particular, the drug cartels have now started to get involved in it. Why?
It's
profitable. And I'll tell you why. Drug smuggling is a profitable business, but so is human trafficking. So is illegal fishing. If they can go over and poach red snapper in American waters, bring it back through Mexico, and then sell it back to America in their marketplace, It's very lucrative. Red snapper is a highly prized fish. It's fairly expensive, and it should be because it needs to be sustained. But they don't have to have the regulated environment if they can get it back into their country and then sell it back into America. It's kind of a double hit. I mean, our domestic fishing fleets, both recreational and commercial, have made great sacrifices the last few years. They needed to. I mean, we needed to do the right thing and rebuild a number of fisheries. But it's really hard to tell an American fisherman, whether it be recreational or commercial, to go by abide by regulations when we have people that come in and poach and then are allowed to continue to do this kind of illegal activity. Mindful, though, this isn't just about fishing. This is about national security and human trafficking, drug smuggling, illegal immigration. There's a whole myriad of web, a negative web of activity, of footprint that these transnational, and if you will, industries are involved in and engaged in the Gulf of Mexico.
So, I mean, when these vessels are out there, you know, in the U.S. exclusive economic zone, and they're doing this unregulated illegal fishing activity, are you saying there could be people being trafficked on that boat? There could be drugs being trafficked on that boat as well?
Yes, there's intelligence from the law enforcement community that says just that. Exactly. And the reason why is because it's convenient. As you see, John, the land-based movements of bodies and people, human trafficking and drugs, America has somewhat responded to that with beefing up the borders. You know, we've been beefing those up for a long time. So these illegal, if you will, cartels and others, they know that. And so they're going to try to find other avenues, and they're there, and they're going to be as creative as they can be to do what they need to do, to get their drugs into this country, to get illegal people in this country, human trafficking, sex slaves, etc. All of those illegal activities. But on top of that, of course, we're mindful of the issue of illegal fishing, which my industry and others that have been very concerned in it for a number of years, now in our discussions with law enforcement, realize that there's a whole web of negative activity, of illicit possible activities that have, you know, in essence, national security implications. This is a big problem. We've got to get our hands around it. Florida and Texas probably are the states that are most affected by it. Texas probably more so than Florida, but remember we have the Caribbean Basin that comes up and does things as well. Mm. So kind of encapsulate what the movement has been, there's two Senate bills that we've introduced. There's Senate Bill 269, which is the International Fisheries Stewardship and Enforcement Act, and that is the first bill that has been introduced in the Senate. And the second bill is the Pirate Fishing Elimination Act. It's Senate Bill 267. And both of these bills that were introduced have passed the Senate Committee of Science, Transportation, and Commerce, thankfully. But that's just a committee. And so why I came down to talk to you today and others, and I've been trying to get as many radio stations as I can, is to, one, inform the public to contact their senators, contact their congressmen, and let them know that these two bills, Senate 269, 267, are valuable pieces of legislation that when they get back on recess, we want them to get off their duff and start doing their job for us, the people of this country. And things like this would go a long way. In D.C., everything's about Republicans, Democrats right now, and they're banging heads about everything. It would be nice, really nice, to see them come together and work on this piece of legislation, which really isn't a DNR thing. It's an American thing.
Well, and you've talked about, when we spoke before, that as this has moved through the Senate committee, it's getting bipartisan support.
Correct. I mean, how often would Senator Cruz, Rubio, and Rockefeller and Begich say, yeah, you know, this really, we need to do this? I love it. It's wonderful. But see, we need that. We need to have the continue that push. And as we continue that push forward, as we see it moving forward, we still have the battle before the full Senate and then, of course, the House version thereof. So, but we got to start some way. I want to be optimistic about it.
Sure.
A lot of people, both business owners and the community, other people in recreational anglers and commercial, et cetera, and just concerned citizens really say enough's enough. We need to put an end to this. It's the right thing to do. It's the right thing for our country. It's the right thing for national security. And it's the right thing to tell people that have been sacrificing for 20 years trying to rebuild fisheries that, you know, we've got your back. We're not going to allow other people come in here and poach and undermine the sacrifices that you have made for the last 20 years.
So, you know, one of these Senate bills that you had just been talking about, the way I understand it is it would just make it much easier for the appropriate law enforcement agencies when they do identify these vessels to not get bogged down, as you say, in these confusing network of treaties that we have with other countries. And that's part of the problem. They can identify these vessels, but they don't even know if they have the legal right to board them.
Yes, it's a whole – as we sit now, John, before – as I sit today before you, because of the flags of convenience and because of the issues of the multiple treaties we have. Granted, we have treaties in place for various reasons. I won't get into all of the transnational reasons of that. But in fisheries, for sure, giving law enforcement one set of blueprints to live by, to board these vessels and make it as easy and straightforward for them as we can, and not give these vessels loopholes after loophole because of the treaty agreements we have, or because they don't even have a treaty with us. Let's say they have a flag of convenience they're flying. Well, they have to treat them differently than they would an American citizen, let's
explain say. That term, flag of convenience.
A flag of convenience, very simply, John, is that when they have these vessels, no, they play the game. There are certain countries that, because of their flagging, every vessel has a flagging at sea, or, if you will, a country of origin. So when they have that system in place, they have certain countries that are very, very nebulous or very laissez-faire-ish, if you will, restricted, very few restrictions on what vessels can and can't do. They have very, very weak fisheries laws and or treaties, if any. And so what these people do, these illegal cottage industry people, and of course now the cartels are involved as well, they know that. They flag their vessels accordingly, and they play the game. And they play the game with our Navy, our Coast Guard, our Border Patrol that goes in back and forth, DEA, whatever. And they know how to play the game such that when you board them in international waters, they know, look, there's very little what the Americans can do to us.
Yeah.
Whereas, conversely, an American vessel, which is flagged with an American flag, it has all the regulations of the Magnuson-Stevens Act, which is the fisheries law that governs all American fisheries in this country. And they will be taken to task, as rightfully so. These two bills, in essence, what they do is they reel it all back in. They say, time out. You're going to be treated just like an American citizen if we catch you. And that's fair. They're not going to be treated excessively. They're not going to be treated any different than you and I, John, would be treated that if we did something wrong. And to me, that's the American way. That's the right thing to do.
Getting back to this, you know, $24 billion economic impact of the illegal industry of fish that are taken in an unregulated, unsustainable way, and then, of course, that's the global number. But what can a responsible buyer or consumer of Gulf seafood do to ensure that whenever they are purchasing a seafood product from the Gulf that they're not supporting an illegal market?
The best thing they can do is become affiliated with and associated with, just familiarize, maybe that's the best word, familiarize themselves with who they buy their seafood from. When they go out to eat seafood from a restaurant, say, hey, look, do you buy local grouper? Do you buy local snapper? Do you buy a local stone crab? Or are you importing something that God knows where it's from, mm-hmm. and God knows what kind of regulations they have? And if they do so, and if the public demands it, if the public is educated about it, then guess what? The restaurants, the marketers will always respond to that. And it's the right thing to do, because when you buy locally, John, also, that economic impact recirculates itself in the community. Mm-hmm. When you buy internationally at times, there's times that the impacts are much, much less so.
We're discussing the growing threat of foreign illegal fishing in the Gulf of Mexico. We're talking with Master Captain and Gulf Fishermen's Association Board of Directors member Will Ward, an outspoken advocate on the issue. Join our conversation with your comments and questions. The phone number is 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Find us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media, or send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Going back to this issue of enforcement and some of the problems that have happened in the past, I'm wondering, can't the U.S. take sanctions against countries where we know these vessels are coming from? Has that been done in the past? And if so, why doesn't it seem to work?
The problem, John, is that the international agreements that we have currently and the international arena which with this country lives by makes it very difficult to have teeth. Now, there's sovereignty issues, as we all know, that our Constitution gives us the rights of certain things here in this country, but international waters, they have international rights as well. And see, people play at that. People play to that nebulousness of that, and they play to the weakness of that. And illegal folks that go out there and engage in these, you know, remember, these aren't just small, independent little operators. These are big operators that are operating on a larger scale.
These are sophisticated
operations. They're playing the game, and they've worked themselves into a cottage industry to basically suck the life out of sustainability in fisheries that people like myself and others have sacrificed years for. And so it's fundamentally unfair for us to allow them to say, well, you know, I can continue to dance around the edges of international law and completely circumvent all the good that people have been trying to do because they want a sustainable fisheries. I mean, again, back to the $14 billion impact, that's huge. I mean, the economic drivers of the fishing industry in the state of Florida is enormous. One of the largest recreational fisheries in the country, one of the largest also commercial industries in the country in terms of the fisheries. So we started, by the way, we did start a website, noillegalfishing.com. And on that, what people can do is they can sign on, click on, get a little educated about just what's going on in detail. Obviously, we won't have enough time to go into all of it today. But then they can also sign on to a petition. And that petition will be sent on to their senator and their congressman. And don't be afraid at their town hall meetings. You know, Congress works for us. We've got to kind of turn it around here. Sometimes I think Congress thinks that we work for them. But they do work for us. And as citizens, we have a right to go to a town hall meeting. We have a right to tweet or to go on Facebook or whatnot and go and comment to them and say, look, I really don't appreciate that people can go over to this country, engage in these kinds of activities, illegal fishing, illegal human trafficking, drug smuggling, etc. And then we're not going to engage in putting forth legislation that could put an end to this. That's unconscionable. We won't stand for it. We need to do something about it. When you go back into Congress in the middle of September, we would appreciate it. You put it at the front of the list, not the back of the list. Mm-hmm. Quit your haggling over the budget and all the other things. I know you're going to have that debate. I get that. But this is not a DNR thing. This is an American thing. We need to protect our country's resources. We need to rebuild them. And poachers are not the way by letting us do that.
Mm-hmm. And you had talked before about the flags of convenience. Is that part of how these vessels can change that flag and maybe alter their appearance enough to conceal their identity in an effort to avoid detection or avoid being boarded? Is that part of the technique?
Some of them do just that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and some of them they've been even on site as they've been monitored from distance from law enforcement, that they have number of flags that they flag. It depends upon how convenient the flag will be in terms of the treaty where they're at. Wow. It depends upon where they're at geographically located. This is it's a shell game. Mm-hmm. It's really sad, but it's come to that. Law enforcement knows it. State law enforcement agencies, federal agencies, the Coast Guard, the Navy, they're frustrated, John. They're truly frustrated by their inabilities to have, first of all, have something more uniform and not to have to come drive around at sea boarding vessels and not knowing for sure, having to look through document after document as to the protocols they have to use to board a certain vessel. This makes it uniform. Senate Bill 269 and 267 erases that, in essence striking the language from some of those treaties in that regard. Not the whole treaties themselves, but when it comes to boarding, when it comes to enforcement, it makes it more uniform, makes more sense, treats everyone more fairly. Instead of some are big winners, some are big losers, right? Makes sense there as well. And then it also just easy for enforcement purposes. If you have a boarding team that has young boarding officers on board that vessel and they're just learning the system, if you will, which many of our Coast Guard has, because I help train Coast Guard officers at the training facility in New Orleans as a volunteer. They bring me up and they help me out and help them with fishing identification and whatnot. Love doing it. They're great guys at the Coast Guard. They can't engage in that, the kind of activity, without having uniform rules behind them. And mm-hmm. if you talk to law enforcement, one of the most important things that they say is that, give me something that I can enforce on the water. Give me something that guys can use, and it's kind of consistent, that I don't have to jump through all kinds of hoops and hurdles like we do now with the treaties that we have in place.
And from an environmental perspective, again, I know it's not just the illegal harvest of important fish stocks that we're regulating to make sure we maintain healthy population levels, but the problem also relates to how these illegal fishing harvesters are operating and techniques they use, things like nets and rules that they just naturally don't observe that people who are doing it legitimately do. What is the concern there? What's going on with the nets?
Well, there's a variety of gears that they're using in restricted areas. It could be nets or long lines or different types of gears. We can use them. I mean, nets and long line gear are both usable in American fisheries, but they have regulations upon them. They have restrictions upon them. So the thing is that when you have someone that's completely unregulated versus an industry that may use a certain particular gear, but it is regulated or restricted in its use, its application, its footprint, that seems like that at least is a compromise, is to allow the industry to have economic activity, but restrict it based upon things reducing of bycatch, wasteful killing of unnecessary animals. But when these individuals engage in that type of fishing, there's no restrictions on them whatsoever. They just wide open, go get it, catch it, bring it back, harvest it illegally, and it's not counted against the stock quota. So it makes it harder for the scientists to monitor. It makes it harder for us to rebuild the fisheries. It makes it much, much harder for us to maintain sustainable fisheries in the Gulf. That's all critical. Those are all linchpins. Those are actual benchmark things that we use in fisheries management, which I've been a part of for 20-plus years, to make sure that we have that $14 billion industry in this Gulf. And let's also think about this, John. Let's just talk about something. Let's take money off the table for a minute.
Okay.
Let's talk about quality of life. What do people come to Florida for? Well, there's a number of things. Surely one of them is going through New Pass, just north here of Bonita Beach, as came down from here from Fort Myers today. And as I went through Fort Myers and coming into Bonita Beach, I went, wow, isn't that beautiful? You've got a mangrove estuary system, pretty much undisturbed, I mean, in a pretty good environment. To the right of me, to the left of me is the Gulf of Mexico. To the left of me is this beautiful wetland, this mangrove area, this estuary. All of these things we're trying to do to protect those things. It's imperative. It's absolutely imperative that we do so. But we can't do so without having people poach continuously.
Right. Well, that is all the time we have for today's program. I want to thank my guest, CEO of Captain's Finest Seafood, Master Captain and Gulf Fishermen's Association Board of Directors member William Ward. He also operates the website noillegalfishing.com with more information and links on foreign illegal fishing. Will, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
John, it was great having me here. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Thanks. Appreciate it.
There's more information on today's show as well as an archive of past shows at our website, wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. To comment on anything you heard on this or any edition of the program, email us, gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Thanks to my producers Luke Martin and Richard Chinqui. This is WGCU Fort Myers 90.1 FM, WMKO Marco 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.